Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone, alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And this week in particular has been a very special week, hasn't it?
It's been such a special week. I mean, all of those things you just said, grow, make wine, special people, special place. Yeah, so we launched a new, shouldn't say a new, it'd be like a, I guess maybe an old, maybe a recognition of time passing, a retro program. But we launched kind of a new initiative for us called the Century Club. And really just out of the idea that part of literally, as you know, and you write about, and we talk about on the show, the part of the DNA, our core DNA of Sonoma County is these family farmers that have invested in our community and invested in the land here and frankly survived decades, if not in some cases, a century plus of figuring it out through so many different obstacles. So we decided it'd be really, really wonderful to get these families that have been farming here continuously for 100 plus years together on an annual basis and actually induct them into our Century Club. So we did that on Tuesday. You were there.
And so tell us a little, talk about how many families there are, because that's what I'm really surprised by.
So 22, and we still haven't heard yet if we've missed anyone, because, you know, occasionally that happens. But we've been doing like a call out for literally months trying to source and go to those families that were here in the beginning. Did they know any other families that were here in the beginning? Were they related to anyone else that was here? So we identified 22 families that have been farming for 100 plus years. Not surprising, most of them have originally farmed something besides wine grapes.
Prunes, in many cases. Yeah, or
prunes and apples. You know, you had hay, you had, dairies. So as they transitioned, so the kind of to be in our Century Club, you had to continuously farm 100 plus years and currently be farming at least some wine grapes. So connected back to the Sonoma County wine growers. So we literally honored 22 families. We made them Century Club pins that they can proudly wear if they're out and about or at an event. And we actually created a vineyard sign that said Century Club on it. Which was really fun. I mean, we know the farmers love their signs. We've already been asked for the logo because I think some of them want to make additional signs, which I just think is really cool. I mean, what a great honor to have on your ranch at your home office, you know, a sign that acknowledges that you've been doing this 100 plus years.
Who are some of the oldest families?
Yeah, well, I mean, one, our current chair of our board, Brett Munsell, he comes, his family's like over 150 years, which is incredible. So I think we are going to do some demarcation of like the 25 and 50, 70, like every 25 years over 100, you get another something. We're figuring that out because I think that is another interesting milestone. But you have so many. I mean, you have the, I mean, just on the list, the Azevedo family. So John, he's part of Jackson family, but his family ranch has been around for over 100 years. You have, let's see, the Basortis, you have the Bacigalupis, you have the Martinellis, you have the Sainis, you have the Duttons. And the Duttons are kind of oddball because they don't have the Italian last name, but mostly you have a list of Italians that, you know, all immigrated over here, or their families immigrated over here, and we're now on the fifth, sixth, and sometimes seventh generation, which is a lot for California.
Well, absolutely. And what I found astounding, too, is it's across Sonoma County.
Yes.
So it's, I mean, obviously there's a lot of the older families that resided in Dry Creek and Alexander Valley early on, then pockets of the Russian River. But then you go over to the Saras Ranch and Sonoma Valley, and it's kind of every pocket. San Giacomo's and Carneros, like it really is every pocket.
It is.
Somebody has made it this long.
Yeah, and I think it's just great to really, one, just thank them for continuing through. I mean, you write about it a lot, just all the things our agriculture has to go through in Sonoma County and small business has to go through to just, you know, survive and succeed. And so here we are in 22 families. And the goal is every year, whether we induct a new family, because there won't always be families hitting that 100-year anniversary every year, we will continue to gather these families and, you know, just sort of have celebration and bring in some meaningful speakers that might be of interest just to kind of keep this core group of Sonoma County connected.
Yeah. I mean, they are the living embodiment of sustainability,
they
right?
They are.
Like, they just prove it every day.
That every day.
Made it through all these different challenges.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's so fun, too. And we had all 22 families represented, which is sort of amazing. I'm like, when do you have everyone say yes to a party you invite them to? So, I mean, because there's no ask but to show up with some of your family members. And,
still,
you know,
it's pretty great.
Have a glass of wine. But, yeah, so that was, it was an just awesome day last Tuesday. And more good things to come with the Century Club.
Okay, well, I will be writing about that on a regular basis. Looking forward to telling those stories. And we will be back to tell some more stories here on The Good Stuff. We are back on The Good Stuff, and our guest today is Randall Watkins, winemaker for Laurel Glen Vineyards in studio. Thanks for joining us, Randall.
Thanks for inviting me. I love Good Stuff.
Oh, well, don't we like a guest who says
like the show
that?
Or just Good Stuff in general? Because I like both.
We like all things that are good.
I've heard the show, and I was also saying in general, I love Good Stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
We're happy that you're here to join us and tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you are absolutely a Sonoma County kid. Grew up, raised, were you born here too? Born and raised?
I was born in Laguna Beach, but moved here when I was very young. Around 3 years old, we moved to Northern California, to Sonoma County.
And so what was the impetus for that? Were your parents interested in wine? Were they interested in owning vineyards? Or was it random?
I almost grew up New Zealander, actually. My dad was a math teacher at Laguna Beach High School, and he said, it's getting too crowded, too busy here. There's a lot of tourists coming to Laguna Beach. I want to go somewhere less expensive and less people. And so he was interviewing in a few places, went to New Zealand. And it turns out, although the cost of living's less there, teachers make equivalently less as here. So we almost moved there, but then ended up in Sonoma County, which I'm very thankful for, because you know, anywhere in the world where great quality grapes grow seems to be quite beautiful, but I think Sonoma County is amongst the top.
I think you've got consensus here in this room anyway. But also, New Zealand, there's a lot of sheep. I mean, there's way more sheep than grapes.
That's
and
true.
Here, there's a nice balance between grapes
I
and
mean,
sheep.
They are cute. Oh,
they're cute, but
good pairing with Cabernet Sauvignon.
I don't think New Zealanders find them cute. I think they find them like there's just a lot of them all the time.
Part of the fabric that might be somewhat of a nuisance once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. So that worked out really well for you. And so,
well, I'm still like New Zealand or Sonoma County. Those are two very different. Those are two very different lives ahead of you, depending on how that went.
Different hemisphere, different accent. Yeah, but
pretty interesting.
I probably wouldn't be a winemaker if I had moved there, but I am very glad for where I ended up living in the country in Sonoma County.
Yeah. So what part did you settle in when you guys moved here?
We first lived in Rincon Valley, and then not long later moved to Bennett Valley, and I bought my parents' house that I mainly grew up in 10 years ago and remodeled it. We live on Taylor Mountain in Bennett Valley.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
But that is where, so when your family moved there, was there already a vineyard, or did your family put a vineyard in?
When I was 10 years old, my dad planted the vineyard to Zinfandel and Chardonnay. And actually, that first year, he made a wine from grapes from another vineyard, which it turns out was right next door to Laurel Glen Vineyard, where I currently work.
Wow, wild.
Berger, Oakshade Ranch. He made a Cabernet Sauvignon and was advised by his friend Patrick Campbell, the original winemaker for Laurel Glen.
That's
in
amazing.
Fact, a pioneer of California winemaking, Patrick.
So was your dad just a hobbyist? How did that happen?
Yeah, math teacher to winemaker. How is that?
Garagiste, is what we say.
Okay, was he a garagiste?
He was a home winemaker, as you say. He would make a barrel of Zin and a barrel of Chardonnay each year. His friends would come over for the harvest party, mm-hmm. and you know, they had their they would hand pick the grapes. They had a hand de-stimmer, which was hard to crank.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had his food grade garbage cans that were her fermenters.
Yeah, amazing. Old school.
He had bought a 50-gallon basket press from this old Italian woman in her garage. So there's
fantastic.
The garage-y part.
Yep.
And then, you know, his friends would come over for the harvest party. They'd all pick the grapes. And afterwards, we would have a big picnic, sharing wines from previous vintages. And it was, you know, it was a really nice way to grow up on a small vineyard in Bene Valley.
Absolutely. And so that must have obviously made a big impact on you, because you, from 10 years on, became really entranced with wine, it seems like, and have made it your life. So when did you sort of fall in love with the process, or did you leave and come back, or like what happened?
Well, I went to UC Davis at 18 years old. You don't really know what career you're going into, most people at least. And I ended up, I took a couple of wine classes there, but didn't know that I wanted to be a winemaker, and ended up studying sociology and environmental policy. And then later I was living in Tahoe and in San Francisco. And at a certain point I decided, I don't really know what I want to do with my life. I'm going to go do my hobby for a little bit. Moved back to Sonoma County and worked at a few wineries. Mm-hmm. I worked my way up. I started in the vineyard sampling and lab work at Buena Vista.
Yeah.
And then I went down to Chile because, you know, people like to do the opposite season.
Yeah.
Worked under a very famous winemaker there, Alvaro Espinosa. Who had worked at Chateau Margaux. He was a really good mentor for me, and great Cabernet Sauvignon he was making. And then I went to over to Napa. I was working in Yountville at S. Anderson, which is now called Cliff Lady.
Yeah, wow, and that's a historic place.
Yeah, yeah, that was great. Long harvests, though, because we were doing everything from sparkling wine to Cabernet Sauvignon. And I did everything there, all the cellar work, all the lab work. If they needed me in the tasting room, I would go in the tasting room. And then after that, I went to, well, I was actually thinking about the winemaker. He taught me how to do the lab work, but I didn't understand the chemistry and microbiology of wine. So I decided I would go back to school, mm-hmm. and I didn't have enough of the science to get into an enology program. So I worked at Hartford Court under Dan Goldfield.
Yeah.
And I at night I was taking classes so that I could then apply to get into enology school. And ended up going to Davis and got a master's in enology. Learned a lot, you know, because I already had all the hands-on winemaking.
Right.
But what I needed for my own knowledge was that chemistry and microbiology, and also wanted to make a little more money too, so that helped.
Yeah, but I like that. I wonder, like, are you happy that you did it in the order that you did, that you had the hands-on first before you did the hardcore science, so you kind of knew what you needed to know? Or what would you advise people that are sort of interested in wine?
I found when I was at Davis, I understood some of what the professors were talking about easier than some of my classmates, because I had done a lot of that work, and they made me the TA for the production class because I had already worked with all the equipment.
Yeah.
But I think I liked the way that I did it, having some of that, you know, physical knowledge before. Before getting into some of the
before the
science.
Book knowledge, yeah, and especially so many different places, so you'd had really picked up a lot of different knowledge, you know, pieces of knowledge.
And worked with a lot of different grapes too.
Yes,
I've
worked with a bunch of different varietals. In later years, began to specialize more in mountain Cabernet, mm-hmm. but I've worked with a lot of different grapes.
So I assume you drank wine at home growing up?
Yes.
That was a question mark
slash statement.
Maybe
some Zinfandel and Chardonnay
say Chardonnay's
from the
in.
Home,
that's what I'm wondering.
The home vineyard.
I mean, was that, did you grow up with the home kind of in a culture of wine drinking, I guess?
When I was in high school, you know, you're going and partying with your friends, we didn't usually choose wine.
But
that's consistent,
I think. Sometimes I would sneak into the cellar because my dad had all these cases that he wasn't going to finish himself. And right. It would be something that we didn't have to buy ourselves. And, we would...
Very inexpensive alcohol.
Enjoy
when
some
it's
of
free.
The cellar.
And he's not counting bottles, it sounds like.
So. Yeah.
I didn't take the fancy ones. I would just take his home winemaking. So. Which is Zin was always really good, but the Chardonnay, not
as much.
Not good. Okay, well.
Does he know you felt that way? Or is he going to listen to the good stuff and, you know, have it unveiled?
Right. Yeah, he does. He lives in Healdsburg, but his hearing's not so good anymore. So I don't think he's going to hear this one.
Okay, that's good. But he's probably pretty happy that you started to make some really nice wines once you got going. So you could enjoy those.
He is a fan of my wines. Yeah, my dad buys more than most of the people I know of my wines.
Oh, that's very sweet. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, so you get your degree and you've got some hands-on experience. At some point, you know, you've worked in Sonoma, you've worked in Napa, you've worked abroad. When did sort of the mountain Cabernet specialization come into play? Was that something you really, you know, clicked at some point that that's what you wanted to do? Or was it more you ended up working somewhere that where that happened?
Right. So, well, in Chile, I was in the Maipo Valley, and that was, at the time, definitely the best area for Cabernet Sauvignon. And it was right at the foot of the Andes there. But then at S. Anderson, we were making from Stag's Leap, Cabernet Sauvignon, and that was mountain grown. But when I really got into... It was after Davis. I became the assistant winemaker first and then later the winemaker and GM of Carmenet Moon Mountain Vineyard. And it was at the time when it was still part of the Chalon Wine Group, which was it was 46% owned by Lafitte Rothschild at the time. So I got a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon experience there, working with Phil Couturi as the vineyard manager. And mountain vineyards, all mountain vineyards,
extreme elevation,
1,400 feet elevation, and great soils. Those rocky red volcanic soils I think are the best for big reds. Basically, decomposed andesite and basalt. The Sonoma volcanics are the soils there, where. It's well drained. It's a bit of a struggle for the vines, and you'll get amazing depth and color in the wines. And lower yields naturally, so the flavor and the concentration can be greater sometimes from these types of places.
Did you have a mentor there when you first started?
I did. Jeff Baker, who you know, brilliant man. He went to Stanford, Davis, and Berkeley. He was the winemaker at Mayacamas in the 70s, and then in the 80s and 90s, Carmenet.
Okay.
He was the original winemaker for Carmenet. Actually started the same year as Laurel Glen, 1981, and was also known as one of the better Sonoma County Cabernet Sauvignon wines
for sure.
In the 80s and the 90s. And we had all five Bordeaux grapes there, but Cabernet Sauvignon was the dominant one.
The interesting thing is, I mean, distance-wise, from Mayacamas to Carmenet, it was not that far, right? I mean, what did they share soil types? Or, I mean, obviously the aspects would be different, but did they share soil types? Was that one of the commonalities?
They definitely have similar soil types. And, you know, if you look at the Mayacamas Mountains, it's almost... right down the middle, the the county line, mm-hmm. Sonoma County.
It's very arbitrary.
On the west and on the east.
Like so many things.
Yeah, so many things, yes.
And up until relatively recently, it was called Sonoma Valley.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there was Mount Veeder. We were kind of the mirror image of Mount Veeder and closer to Mount Veeder than a
to
lot of
Sonoma Valley in some ways. Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have Moon Mountain now be recognized as a very distinct place of its own. And I think, you know, those pioneering efforts from the Monterosos, from the Henzels, from the Carmenes is what made that happen.
I agree. Yeah, I've made quite a few wines from Monterosso as well, which is a great vineyard.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we are due to take a quick break, but when we come back, we have lots more to talk about with our guest, Randall Watkins, winemaker for Laurel Glen Vineyards. Good stuff with our guest, Randall Watkins, winemaker for Laurel Glen Vineyards. And when we left, we were talking about your time up on Moon Mountain. But now, well, actually not, you know, now since 2011, your focus is Laurel Glen Vineyards, which is Sonoma Mountain. So you're kind of getting back to your roots in some way. Can you tell us a little bit about how you ended up at Laurel Glen?
Yes.
That's a good answer. So, he's like, no, I'm not going to talk about that.
Well,
thanks for asking.
I was hoping he would.
Okay, no, just messing.
Well, I've told you a little bit of the beginnings where the other wineries I worked for, and I was working at Carmenet, which then became Moon Mountain Vineyard as a brand. Mm-hmm. The vineyard was called Moon Mountain Vineyard before, and the winery Carmenet, but they sold the name Carmenet, which I thought was kind of a mistake, first of all. And then Diageo bought out the group of mm-hmm. Chalon, and things kind of changed. You know, it became this small winery owned by a giant spirits mm-hmm. company, and we were a little bit lost.
Yeah,
and I decided, you know, I'd rather go back to something smaller. So I started doing some consulting for a few years. And then a mutual friend that of both Bettina Seychelle and myself, Bettina had just purchased Laurel Glen Vineyard from Patrick Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And she was looking for a winemaker. And he said, I think Randall Watkins would be a person you should talk to, my friend. So Bettina and I met, and we totally hit it off. I told her some stories about how I had been to the vineyard when I was 10 years old. It was my first time I had ever been there.
Yeah.
And that my dad had actually this piece of paper that he found in his files that was recipe for red vino on one side and white vino on the other. Patrick Campbell had written for him.
Wow.
So Patrick Campbell, the original winemaker of Laurel Glen since 1981, all the way to 2010.
Yeah.
And then in 2011, I was hired to be the second winemaker ever for the vineyard.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was pretty cool. It was.
But how interesting, too. There's only been two winemakers. I did not know that for that property.
Yeah.
That's really special.
Patrick Campbell was a legend who doesn't really get remembered as much as maybe he should be. I mean, he sort of transformed the notion of mountain Cabernet in Sonoma County, I would say.
He did. And, you know, people that are older than us, they all know about him, of mm-hmm. course. And I hear from people all the time that say, I have Laurel Glen in my cellar and I have for many years. But then people younger than us, they have not really yet been introduced.
Right.
Yeah.
And, well, that's a new goal for us, I guess.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to expose people. But that was what I remember so much was it was just known as a wine that you could age, you know, in an old school, old world kind of way that a lot of California wines weren't being given that due yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, great point. It's Laurel Glen has always been one of the more age-worthy California Cabernet Sauvignons. And part of the reason for that is that it's a cooler site than most of Sonoma County Cabernet. The Sonoma Mountain is one mountain range to the west of the Mayacamas Mountain Range. And it's actually largely responsible for how warm it can get in Sonoma Valley and on the Mayacamas, because it blocks that Petaluma Gap cooling breezes from the Pacific Ocean. In fact, the west side of Sonoma Mountain is very cool and is planted to Pinot Noir mainly, some Chardonnay. I'm on the east side. Laurel Glen Vineyard is about 1,000-foot elevation, and it gets the morning sunlight, the midday. And by the hot afternoon, it's a little more indirect light when it's going. It does get many hours of ripening, but it's not so direct when it's at its hottest. And so we have long hours of flavor development at a lower sugar and typically higher acidity. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to give you that ageworthiness. The lower pH is going to slow down the rate of oxidation. Also, the mountain tannins, so the antioxidant properties, are higher with those thicker skins from the elevation, and smaller berries would have more of that antioxidant. Mm.
So what's all planted on the vineyard? What are you all making?
It is, except for one row, 100% Cabernet Sauvignon. And the one row was planted in the 1880s, and it's mixed blacks. Uh-huh. And I'm actually pretty good at ampelography, but I can't recognize many of these.
Wow.
They're kind of twisted, you
That's
know.
That's amazing.
Beautiful, old, ancient vines.
Do you still get grapes off of them?
We still get grapes from there. Patrick would put the mixed blacks row into the Cabernet, but Bettina came up with an idea. Well, what if we made a rosé with it? And we started with that, which became kind of a big hit. And, and then she said, well, can you make twice as much? I said, well, we don't have any more ancient vines.
Yeah. We got one row.
But we started to get some fruit from our neighbor, Pickberry Vineyard, which was planted in the 70s, so old enough to go into our old vines rosé. And then the block one was planted in 1968, so 1 year older than me, these vines.
That's amazing.
It is. We still have some of block one living. We replanted part of it, and we also have block four. It was planted in the 70s.
Okay. But you're dealing with some older vines.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges you have viticulturally to sort of keep them going?
Well, old vines can come into their own self-balance where they are not producing very much fruit, and sometimes that can be a good thing, but they're also usually in a wide spacing because that's how tractors were back when they were planted larger. And so the row spacing and between the vines can make it sometimes not as feasible. You know, we're getting 1 ton per acre from the real old vines.
Pretty small.
And so that becomes a little bit more challenging. Another thing, disease pressure when vines get to be that old. There is a good amount of Eutypa, the dead arm disease, in there. But the quality is still so good, we just have decided, okay, we're going to go with it. And it's still making the cut for our Laurel Glen Vineyard estate, and sometimes even for a small bottling we do in homage to Patrick Campbell.
So what have you changed winemaking-wise since you've been there? I mean, Patrick may have given you the red vino, white vino instructions too, possibly. And I remember seeing some of the original production area, which was, let's just say, primitive. What have you done to kind of like evolve the winemaking to still keep the style?
Right. I've always loved his wines, and I didn't want to change much, but there were some things that we thought we could tweak and improve upon. One in particular, he was harvesting with this ancient contraption called the myrtle. Have you heard of it?
No.
No.
Okay.
I know the name, though.
I know.
I think there's two or three in the U.S., but it's kind of like a tank on its side. It's towed behind the tractor, and since Patrick didn't have a crush pad, he would use it for de-stemming in the field. So you're picking into the lugs like we all do, and then, well, sometimes we pick by machine, sometimes by hand. And this is by hand into the small lugs, which then are dumped into usually a half-ton macro bin or something larger. This was put into a hopper on the back of the myrtle, and it would had an auger that would then push the grapes through and destem. And once it was filled, 4.5 tons about, then he could drive to the winery from the vineyard, which is right next to it, and then pump to a 4.5-5 ton fermenter. Yeah, which is very efficient, right? The stems, the nutrients lost by the vines are going back in as compost. But it was a little rough, and it was the auger itself would kind of grind the stems and seeds a bit, introducing more green tannin than we wanted. And so I did use it once.
One and done.
Well, that explains everything.
But we decided we would go with more modern equipment that's more gentle. And we are able to do sorting as well. He wasn't able to do any sorting, hand sorting. We can take out leaves or overripe, underripe clusters if there's anything that we see that we decide to take out.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break. Yes. When we come back, we'll talk more with Randall Watkins about winemaking at Laurel Glen.
Welcome back to The Good Stuff. Our guest today, Randall Watkins, winemaker for Laurel Glen Vineyards. And we were just chatting during the break about sort of Laurel Glen's commitment to sustainability and how you're farming. Do you want to give us a little background on what you're all doing there?
Yes. We have been farming organically since 2011 when I started. And I've worked with Phil Couturier since 1999, and he is our vineyard manager. He grew up on Sonoma Mountain, not far. In fact, we share our bottom fence line with the Couturier Ranch.
It's good to know your neighbors.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So as our sustainable practices, we are using compost, you know, to build healthy soil and promote biodiversity. We have cover crops.
Yes.
To add nutrition to the vines and also to, you know, help out with erosion control. And we are, you know, as far as water conservation, a lot of years we can actually dry farm.
Wow.
We do have, you know, irrigation in place, except for that block that I was telling you about from the 70s. That one is always dry farmed. The rest, we have the potential to irrigate, but many of the blocks, except for the youngest one, gets water every year. We're trying to get the roots established deeper by watering infrequently, but then deeply.
Yeah.
Some of the blocks, depending on the year, this last year, which was hotter, we did irrigate everything, but most years only the young vines are getting irrigated.
Do you ever worry about frost up there?
We are typically above the frost.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, right? Level. I feel like most of Sonoma Mountain, most of those vineyards are above.
Yes. Mountain vineyards don't usually have frost control in place because of the natural, as the sun has gone down for the day, the heat from the valley is actually rising and the cool air is kind of sliding down. So the lower points and swales would have more of that danger for frost.
Yeah. Well, so how do people come visit Laurel Glen? Do they get to hang out with you? How do we get your wines? How do we drink all this amazing Cabernet?
Can they see the myrtle?
Yeah. Can they visit the myrtle, take photos with the myrtle? What's
We have a super cool taste room, which has just recently been redecorated in the village of Glenillan.
Mm-hmm.
Cool
it
little
is
village.
A village.
Mm-hmm. We're in the stone building right across from the Jack London saloon that everybody knows about. We're right next door there.
Classic.
And also across from the beautiful Glenillan market.
Hey, don't knock it. There's some really good sandwiches
I'm there often, so
So we have a few different tasting options. You know, one is kind of a library tasting, which is awesome. Not many wineries have such a history of, you know, making Cabernet for a long period of time and actually holding back a bit so that we can taste it over time. Mm. We have a very deep library, and you can taste through that with our special tastings. And in fact, our normal tasting will often include one library wine as well. And we have, over the years, have been adding a few different options. Right now we have a chilled wines, so a few whites and a rosé together. Oh.
Nice.
Okay, so and then there's Counterpoint too, which is also from Laurel Glen. People may not always make that connection, but it's maybe, would I say, a more approachable Cabernet?
Yes, we still are making Counterpoint every year, and it is, Patrick came up with it in order to elevate the quality of the estate. So from 81 to 85, he made just the estate and then added Counterpoint. And we've continued with that tradition. The Counterpoint, you can drink a little bit earlier because Laurel Glen continues to improve with age. It's very, it has more structure to it than the Counterpoint. Counterpoint, I also add a little bit of Merlot from our neighbors at Pickberry.
So that softens a little bit.
Beautiful.
Well, everyone, you should go visit. Check out the website. It's laurelglen.com. That's L-A-U-R-E-1-L, Glen, G-L-E-N.com, laurelglen.com. Or follow along on Instagram at laurelglenwine to see everything that's up. Maybe you can post some pictures of the Myrtle for those folks that want to check it out when they're listening to the show.
Will do. Yeah.
Because that seems like so much fun. So, excellent. Well, thank you for being on our show today, Randall. Thanks for giving us some more history.
My pleasure.
Well, that was another lovely Saturday spent thinking about Sonoma County history and wine and grapes and myrtles.
And myrtles. I know. I don't think we're pronouncing it right. We're not getting the German umlaut on that.
No. That's okay.
I know. I mean, what a great history of Laurel Glen Winery. I mean, as we're talking about the Century Club this week and kind of founding families, it's always fun to hear about those stories. Two winemakers at this in one winery's history. That's actually kind of pretty unreal for it not being a founding winemaker, right? I mean,
really interesting to think about how that happens. And I mean, I do remember walking the vineyard with Patrick Campbell many times.
Really?
And he was a legendary guy. And I think he is still around, but obviously not as involved in winemaking or Laurel Glen, but very historic producer for Sonoma County.
Yeah, so great. And just shout out again, laurelglen.com, and you can visit them at their tasting room. It's over in Glen Ellen, and they're open every day from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Walk-ins are welcome.
Across from the Jack London Saloon.
Yes, across from the saloon. Have some wine, and then go for some chicken wings.
The saloon is pretty fun. So, all right, so let's get to it.
I know.
Good Stuff Wine, our Tuesday night. I'm gonna honor the history of Laurel Glen with their.
Of course. I love it.
They have a 2018 Laurel Glen Cabernet that they call Lot 50 because it was commemorating the 50th year that Cabernet had been planted there.
Oh, I love that.
How often does that happen?
I know.
Not often.
Like one time.
It's only 50 once. Yeah.
Just for the record.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna go. You know, honor Randall's earlier parts of his career, and I'm going to have a 2022 Hartford Court Three Jacks Vineyard Chardonnay because he talked about his time at Hartford Court and learning winemaking under Dan Goldfield when he was there. So I think that should be lovely, and that way we have our Chardonnay and our Cabernet, so we'll have to get together.
I think that works perfectly, and I think a lot of people learn to make wine at Hartford Court. There's been a long legacy of great winemaking there.
I love that, and how much mentorship just exists throughout sort of Sonoma County and the wine community in general across California. But
Well, I'll see you Tuesday.
Of course.
You know, congratulations to all the Century Club families out there. And to everyone, thanks for joining us on The Good Stuff from Sonoma County to wherever you are. Remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that. Good time.